You know, politicians do have to think about what we say. And I think the trouble with Twitter, the instantness of it, is I think there's too many twits might make a twat.
Hello, and welcome to the Open Conservative Project with me, Sam Colson, and my co-host, Tom Hobson. How are you doing, Tom?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm living the life of politics being interesting again. How are you?
All right. Yeah, I think I'm enjoying it as well. We're recording this on the morning of Thursday, the 13th of January, 2022. Yep. This is the morning after a day when the Prime Minister has had to go out and, well, you know, fight for his political career in a weird way.
Yes, absolutely it has.
I feel like we're back in kind of 2019, and you know we've got talk of letters going in, and all that jazz. I don't know how should we start this. It's worth saying that we haven't spoken about this at all, really. We've exchanged a few texts with friends, but like we haven't spoken about the situation. And in our last podcast, we said, "Oh, we think this scandal's run its course."
So that one went out of date pretty quickly.
It did, didn't it? As they tend to.
Yes, we did. We said this was going to be over. He'll still be there in a year's time. If there's shit to be done, may as well get it out of the way, blah, 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 blah. But we did say, barring major disaster, a major disaster has hit. I mean, it's really hit.
Yes.
Because his non-apology just proves what everyone was saying.
Well, let's go back to how this kind of restarted, which is there was a party on the 15th of May 2020, which someone took, well, there was a work meeting outdoors in the Downing Street garden, in the Rose Garden, on the 15th of May 2020, which someone took a photo of from the window of the Treasury, which looks over it. Sent it to the news, there was a whole to-do, and what it essentially did is force Boris into saying, "Oh, that was a work meeting, that one, where there's loads of people standing around with, you know, glass in their hands on the lawn and, you know, whatever else. That's a work meeting, bottle of wine on the table." And then they asked Sue Gray to investigate. Sue Gray, by now a household name for a civil servant. she is notorious. And, you know, no doubt will be written into the history of this thing. You know, and then they were saying, "Look, we've got to wait for the investigation. We've got to wait for this investigation." And then it turns out, because of one Dominic Cummings, actually, there was a party on the 20th of May, which was an actual party. And ITV got hold of the email inviting about 100 people to a BYOB party in the Downing Street garden.
Astonishing. Absolutely astonishing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's mad, and so yesterday this kind of culminated in it being fairly obvious that yes, a party was held, and that some senior players were there, and the Prime Minister basically having to say, you know, I didn't break the law, but what did he say, Tom?
Well, what did he say? He apologised for his lack of judgment in not sending people home or sending people back inside and saying this shouldn't be happening. And he kept saying, wait for the Sue Gray report. And he also, he repeated that point a lot, which makes me wonder, you know, is there something that either he knows or does he know something else that's going to make it look like actually it wasn't so bad on his front? So he just kind of kept saying that point. So he apologised for there being a work-related event that seemingly looks like a party. Am I right in saying that? You know, I watched it yesterday and I found it fascinating, but I want to get it right.
Sure. So he was essentially saying that there was a party, okay, but that he was not...
Was there for 25 minutes.
He was there for 25 minutes and he went around and he thanked people for their hard work.
Yeah.
And then he went back inside to do more work.
Yes,
and that's his response. And the first thing I kind of want to talk about is in saying that, and I think I'm reading this correctly, he's just chucked all of his staff underneath the bus attended a party, which was illegal at that point.
Except for the fact, you know, it was an office, and from what he says, the gardeners are the extension of the office.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it was very carefully worded, his apology. And that's all I could think at the time, because it was so specific. And I'm listening to people this morning on the radio and others defending him and saying, oh, he showed a lot of contrition. And I'm just thinking, sorry, where did he show contrition? You know, contrition... Yeah. How to show contrition was proven by Allegra Stratton when she apologised.
Mm-hmm.
She was in floods of tears. She was broken by what she had joked about, hadn't even attended a party. That was contrition.
Yeah, because you know, she wasn't employed at the time, right?
Yeah, he was stony-faced throughout that entire exchange. I didn't see much contrition or hear or feel much contrition in him.
And then, according to, I believe it was Laura Kunzberg I saw tweeting about this, he was then in the tea room after the main event. So, you know, hobnobbing with the Tory MPs, essentially going around and apologising to them for all the kind of the furore. And apparently there he was saying essentially that, you know, he was taking the bullet for other people.
Yes.
And he was apologising to help other people out. Not that he's apologising because he feels like he should actually apologise.
Yeah.
And I think it's a bit rich to go to the house and say, I'm very sorry, you know, contrition, and then go straight to your MPs afterwards and say, oh, actually, I didn't really mean it.
Yeah, I was apologising for other people, because he was only there for 25 minutes and he was thanking people and then he went back inside to do more. What does it all mean? You know, actually, the big question is, when is he going to go? And why are some people so insistent on rallying around him at the moment?
Yeah. Look, shall we talk about the rallying around quickly? Because I have in front of me the Daily Mail front page this morning. I should say the Mail Online front page this morning, because I don't know if this is the front of the Daily Mail. And they have... the headline is, Rishi Sunak's tepid support for Boris Johnson stands out like a sore thumb as he is backed by 26 cabinet ministers in fight to survive, blah, blah, blah. And what they have here is a little graphic, which I really like, actually, which I think Sam Coates at Sky actually originally did the maths on this. They have a picture of every cabinet minister, and then superimposed on that the time at which they tweeted support for Boris Johnson.
Yeah.
And it's just like a chronological thing of when did they all tweet support. And so you've got people like Brandon Lewis coming in very late at 10:05 PM last night.
Okay.
You know, Rishi, you know, quite late as well, I believe, because he was very busy in Devon. And perhaps, Tom, it's worth us talking about that in a second.
But we haven't give anything away.
Yeah, but we haven't heard from... Is it the Welsh Secretary and the Northern Ireland Secretary? Like, essentially the devolved regions are not hugely rallying around. Which, again, we can talk about in a second. But I just thought the Cabinet has... It's worth saying the Cabinet has kind of fallen into line behind him. And it's the usual people that you would expect doing so very quickly. Nadine, Pretty, Michael Gove, because... He's got to, because otherwise I'm guessing Boris will sack him after he stabbed him in the back in 2017.
So, yeah, I'm finding Michael Gove's defence an interesting one. I would have thought he'd potentially do what Rishi's doing and, you know, hold back. But I suppose they do have a long history, don't they? I don't know.
They do.
I'm not going to speculate too much on that one. But it's the usual faces. You're right. It's the usual faces coming out and supporting him because, you know, they pinned their colours to the mast quite early on Boris. And... they probably know that they won't be in the position they're in should it be someone else.
Yeah.
Ultimately. And I think that's kind of what's driving it. I mean, I also think of someone like Dominic Raab. You know, would Theresa May have him in her cabinet? Would David Cameron?
Yeah.
Not now.
Not now. And that's why he was the third cabinet minister to come out and support Boris at 3:15 PM, according to the Mail Online. Just behind Michael Gove at 3:22. It's great.
Do you know what really frustrates me? Really frustrates me as... And you're coming back to the real point of this, you know, the grassroots politics.
Yeah.
You and I, possibly me more than you in the last few years, put a lot of effort into getting these people into the positions they're in. And they just fuck around and treat it... treat it like it is something else, like it's not as important as it is.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people in the Conservative Party who will feel that way. And ultimately will decide, especially if he's still there at the next general election, that it isn't worth the effort.
Mm, that's very interesting. Should we come back to that discussion, maybe? And because what I want to do is talk about the likelihood of him going.
Yeah.
Who are the people kind of pushing? Because I think we've basically covered why people don't want him to go. That's because they like their jobs, right? And I think that almost everybody else is like, yeah, okay, fine, time for him to go. That's the kind of vibe I get. And that seems to be what MPs are kind of briefing out now to journalists. And then let's talk about kind of impact of him going or staying, you know, come the next election. So the people that want him to stay, cabinet, because they want their jobs. And I think some MPs, but not all, crucially, they still view Boris as a good thing electorally. Now, there was a poll last night, which I believe was a YouGov one, which put Labour 10 points ahead.
Yeah.
Tories under 30 points for the first time in a long time.
not since Theresa May, if we've seen that.
yeah. And I believe the fieldwork for that was done before the apology. So whether or not that impacts, I don't know, but I'm pretty sure it
definitely
was.
Will. Yeah.
Because it's a bit of a non-apology. I don't feel like the papers are covering it in a very favourable way. So there are some MPs that think he's still good electorally, but there is now a larger chunk, and let's talk about Scotland here, Tom, where Boris Johnson is so toxic that, well, the leader of the Scottish Conservatives has called for him to go.
Well, and the former leader of the Scottish Conservatives, Rhys Davidson. I mean, like, I think he's always been a problem in Scotland electorally for them.
Yeah.
So they've always tried to distance themselves from him, and this probably just kind of tips it over the edge. One thing I did text you yesterday was he's already called for that. Actually, in December, he basically said, if it is found that he has broken the rules, then he should go. So he's sticking to that consistently. You know, the infighting has started, because then you've got a member of the cabinet, Jacob Rees-Mogg, basically saying, well, he's a lightweight. I mean, is it going to help anyone? No, it's not. Ultimately, it's not going to stop what is potentially inevitable, and that is the Prime Minister either resigning or the Parliamentary Party kicking him out. Because actually, where is the ball at the moment? The ball is with the Parliamentary Party.
Yes.
And it's their decision as to whether he stays or goes. Now, the Scottish MPs have made their decision, and quite publicly made their decision. Yeah. I wonder how many people have done it, but haven't publicly made their decision known.
So as it stands, it's what, 15% of Tory MPs need to put a letter in. That's 54, by the way, individual MPs. We know that the Scottish Tories have done, because they've done so very loudly, as you said.
Yeah.
And there are definitely a few others floating around.
I'm sure.
I think there was an estimate I saw last night that there are probably about 20 letters in for Graham Brady.
Many, actually.
No, but remember, it took, you know, people were talking about this with Theresa May for like 3 months. And then there's the kind of sudden rush at the end. But my theory on this is, well, it's not really a theory, but the Scottish MPs coming out and doing that so publicly has cleared the way for other people to do it. And maybe not publicly, but certainly privately putting their letter in, because they understand there's a kind of strength in numbers, and they are more part of, you know, the group. I think the challenge for Boris is actually to survive until Monday. If he can get through the kind of weekend papers, without anything, you know, a party on the bloody 22nd of May, if he can get through without that kind of thing, I think the whole thing could abate faster. And then it's his job then to kind of rebuild the confidence within the parliamentary party. But if there's something else, I think we're going to see an absolute wave, and I think this could actually go to a vote. Because how much lower can it get for him, frankly? Like, he can't do that same apology again if it's found that he's done a very similar thing another time.
No, he can't. I mean, what do we potentially see? You know, if he survives the week and there's no other big revelation, and I think that's a big if.
Yes.
Are we potentially going to see him run up to the May local elections and, you know, cause a disaster there in the same way that Theresa May did? You know, it would be the same pattern, wouldn't it?
That's very true. Yeah.
And if that happens, and it's just proven that he is an electoral liability yet again, because I would argue it's been proven now. You know, North Shropshire
sure,
was a good example
yeah.
of that. We've actually got the South End by-election coming up in February. Now, all the major opposition parties are standing aside, so actually, you know, it might actually be a little bit of good news tinged with, well, you're going to win it anyway.
Yeah.
But the May local elections might be the point. Might be the point. But that's a long time to last.
It is a long... That's 4 months.
Yeah.
A bit under. The speed at which politics moves these days means... Oh, okay. Let's work this back. Could the Tories have a leadership contest done by the May elections? No, I don't think so. I don't think you're squeezing one into 3 months. And that's assuming he goes, like, this week.
Yeah, possibly. I don't know. This is the other problem. You know, the people who are wanting the job actually need to spend a bit of time securing their position and preparing for the contest.
Visiting local associations, that kind of thing.
What, like North Devon?
Where Rishi Sunak was all day yesterday.
And that's... That's, I think, you know, that's a practical consideration for holding back at the moment. Also, if there are some difficult decisions on the cost of living crisis, you know, do you, as a new Prime Minister or leader of the party, want to be the person enacting that? Actually, you know, these decisions have got to be made pretty soon. Let's leave it up to the lame duck to do a really difficult thing, piss a lot of people off, and then come in after that. And there is an argument for that. And that's kind of what I was saying last week. There's still some practical reasons why he might be there for a little bit longer. And the only thing that would change that is one, him resigning, or Sugre's report coming out that completely damns him. That would change it.
That is very true. The Sugre report, I don't think it's going to be anything. I don't think it'll say anything of interest. I think it'll be complete whitewash inside the organisation. I think maybe at most, it will throw a spad underneath the bus, and a fairly senior spad that maybe someone's heard the name of before.
But then again, you know, who sent out the email for this party? It was a senior civil servant.
It was a civil servant. But there's a lot of question marks over that email, because it says, we. Okay,
does it?
So
I haven't read it.
Yeah, the thing is, we think it would be a good excuse to go and, you know, make the most of the sun or whatever. It's very much in a kind of collective voice that it's written.
Yeah.
Then the question is, okay, what was he doing that morning that we thought that would be a good idea? Was he sitting with the Prime Minister? You know?
Interesting.
Was he in a meeting with Simon Case? You know? Like, what was he up to that we thought it would be a, you know? Anyway, I'm sure we won't get the answers to that, Tom.
Maybe we've jumped the gun a little bit early on doing this podcast because it's just quite exciting. And there's not enough information out there, and actually there are not enough people publicly saying what they want.
Yeah.
I'm surprised at the number of people publicly backing him, if I'm honest, based on what I've seen on Twitter.
Yeah. I do get it. If you're a moderate 2010 intake MP, right, you've seen a lot of nonsense in your time as a Tory MP since 2010.
Yeah.
And I think the real lesson is, you know, unless you want to be that person that's like, you know, doing a bit of media and blah, 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 keep your head down. Because then whoever the next leader is going to be, then maybe you can come out and bat for them without baggage, right? Just keep your head down and get on with your job. Maybe tweet a bland message of vague support and call it a day. And then, you know, whack your letter in. I think it's that. I really do. Because...
We've also got a lot of 29ers, a lot of new MPs.
Yeah.
And actually taking the leap to sending a letter to the chair of the 1922, someone who's been an MP for a long time... And Boris, who's been in politics for a long time compared to a lot of these people who haven't,
Yeah.
It's a big decision to make. And they also, a lot of them know that they owe their seats to him.
Yes. So let's maybe talk about, you know, the famous red wall in that instance.
Oh, where... he's lost at this stage.
Yeah, exactly. And so if you are one of those MPs, you're saying, yes, you know, ultimately, yeah, Boris did help me get elected, but at this point, he's doing more harm than good. And you can't just be thankful forever. At no. some point, you need to look to the future, and the future actually now is not that far away, necessarily. Nope. It's potentially next year that there's going to be another election. Or, you know, it's not going to be too long, basically. And you need time to kind of right the ship. If this, you know,
and secure your own position continues, locally.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you need a good leader in there to be, you know, your champion in the seat.
Which is why you shouldn't necessarily rush. You know, let a clear front runner come forward.
Right, yes.
Which I think will happen. And then, you know, pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, I think it will happen. The next election will be fought by someone else. But let a clear front runner come forward, mark the change, and then pull the trigger. Because, you know, what's the point of rushing it and it going wrong / out of control? Because it can, you know, it could easily go out of control.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, when similar events happened in 2019 with Theresa May, there was a clear frontrunner, and that was Boris.
Yes.
And we don't have that now, as we were saying, you know, just the other day in our other podcast. Rishi is the closest thing to it.
Well, what's the party going to do? What's instinctively the party going to do? In my mind, it's going to pivot back to serious, because it needs to.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just wishful thinking on my part, but there aren't... Well, it probably is.
But I don't think these people would know a serious leader if you know, one smacked him in the face. I think once you've gone Boris, it's very hard to swing back the other way, isn't it? You need for my money, Tom, you need a period of opposition to rediscover how to be a serious party after someone like Boris.
Well, I think that's coming, potentially.
Yeah.
I do think that's coming. It's going to be 13, 14 years of Conservative government.
Yeah. It's a long time.
Are the general public just going to turn around and say, it's not your turn anymore?
Yeah, yeah. We want someone serious, like Keir Starmer.
I mean, he's got integrity in spades by comparison right now, hasn't he?
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely.
But, you know, he's got integrity in spades by comparison, and the fact that people know very little about him, whereas people know a lot about Boris.
Yeah. Seems like people know more about Boris than Boris knows about Boris at some points, to be honest. And he doesn't catch up fast enough with what people know and what people care about.
So if we come back to our conclusion of last week of actually he's going to be there for a little bit longer than everyone wants him to be.
Yeah.
Because of practical considerations.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. But also, Tom, us saying that and putting it on a podcast definitely means that it won't happen. So
that is true. They do tend to go out of date pretty quickly.
They go out of date. Unbelievable. We every time we record a podcast, I'm like, this is great. I'll edit this over the next couple of days and bang it up. And it is out of date, honestly, 3 hours after we stop recording. It is
unbelievable. Well, it's because we record in the morning.
Yeah.
Maybe we start recording in the evening. I think the other thing we could talk about is the betting odds. You know, okay. I like a political bet. Who's
Yeah, of like, course. Hang on. I'm just going to pull them up in front of me. You talk.
Go for it. The betting odds are essentially 2-1 for the Chancellor to become the next leader of the party. I'm talking about next leader of the party, and I know that kind of means they'll end up as the next Prime Minister, but...
Yeah.
That's the one single bet that I've done. And then Liz Truss is second, and then there's pretty much everyone else with odds ranging from long to very long.
Yeah. I'm looking at the Odds Checker, which is an aggregator of betting information. Yep. Rishi Sunak, is number one. Liz Truss, as you say, and then Keir Starmer is number three for best.
As the next.
This is next PM.
Okay. Okay.
I.e., Boris lasts until that point, but then loses the election.
I don't know.
And that's 6-1, which for being leader of the opposition and being 6-1 to be the next prime minister, I think is quite a telling tale.
It's not great.
Those are not short odds.
No, they're not, are they? But then again, you know, it assumes that he'll be gone before the next election.
Next leader of the party, I said this last week and I think I stand by it, I think Rishi. Because I am not sure how serious a man he is. Because of things like, you know, the ice skating photos and whatever is discussed.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be Rishi. I think Rishi will be the next PM, potentially. I think he would be good for the polls. Like, I think he's got the media stuff down. He clearly has a good media team, or, you know, good enough anyway.
Yeah.
I think it would represent a bit of a clean break. And he is still popular off the back of...
He's the Chancellor for the current Prime Minister.
Well, I know, but he was only brought in, you know, start of COVID, and people's perception of... Well, my perception of time anyway, Tom, is that that was about 3 hours ago that we were that Rishi was first brought in. So, you know, I think it represents somewhat of a clean break. And honestly, he is doing his best to keep his hands out of the mud. He's never been accused of being at one of these parties.
Nope.
He was out of Westminster yesterday.
Yep.
You know, doing other stuff, like announcing jobs.
Unlike the other front runner who was sat right next to the Prime Minister.
Right next to him, absolutely. And I think it's going to be very hard for someone like Liz Truss to shake off the... Truss will find it hard to, you know, get rid of the kind of the odour, as it were, of Boris. She's been around it all too long.
Well, she has in a way. And, you know, when she was asked, who's your favourite foreign secretary, she said Boris Johnson.
Boris Johnson. I mean, it's just embarrassing, isn't it? She, in my mind, is honestly one of the least serious people we have in government. Like, I just have absolutely nothing.
But, and then we come back to my point of pivot to serious and say, therefore, it's not going to be her. This is why I don't think there should be a rush to just replace him. We need a decent amount of time to scrutinise these people, understand where they come from, what they think, how they approach things, and come to a logical conclusion. Because the last time we had a rush leadership election, we all plumped for the same person instinctively.
Well, a lot of people did.
A lot of people did. You know, enough people did to just make it so obvious
that
it ended up being problematic and a mistake ultimately.
Yes.
And we ended up in a worse situation. So I don't think the party should rush to just do anything just yet. Which is why nothing's really happening, because I suspect there's enough people thinking the same. Is that fair?
I think it's fair. I think it's fair. I do think, for what it's worth, there is, we've said a number of times now, there is no obvious answer, right? So there won't be a coronation this time. There will definitely be a fight for it. And I'm sure someone unexpected will throw their hat into the ring. I mentioned Tom Tugendhat. I'd still, you know, love to see that. You know, or even, like you said, a Penny Mordaunt. Great, you know, a much more serious person.
Wait, did you see she tweeted yesterday evening she met with the Chancellor?
Oh, very good. Very good, Penny. So, you know, I think there are these people out there. Probably at the moment, they're just trying to keep their names out of the paper as much as humanly possible. Go around to the nice local Conservative associations and probably to be doing a lot of tea room chat. If you're a smart operator that can get away with not doing media, Rishi has to do media, right? Because he's the Chancellor.
Yep.
He's expected to answer the tough questions, and that's fair. But if you're not in a position like that, keep your head down, get some MPs on side and get ready for, you know, 2 months' time or after the May elections, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's it.
This is not going to be a quick thing. You know, if it is a quick thing, then what do? We actually play into the hands of the opposition. We create internal chaos. There's a lack of control. And you fall into the trap of doing as the opposition say because the papers are so bad.
Well, you know what, though? I think that's a bit of sunk cost fallacy.
Go on.
Of, like, Is it sunk cost fallacy? What I mean to say is, I think, Tom, we're already in that state.
Yeah.
And the idea that a change of leader will create that state, I think, is slightly for the birds, because if we're already there, I think it's one of the only things that could pull us out.
Well, yes and no, as long as it's controlled.
Yeah. But you'd expect a good next leader to be able to control that. That would be one of the tests, right?
Yeah.
Would be, you have a, you know, slightly bruising, slightly shitty couple of months of Tory leadership election.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have a winner, everyone falls into line, which the Tories do, you know.
Yeah.
People fall into, like, they get behind the new leader. You know, Jeremy Hunt did it immediately with Boris.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it is what has happened. So I'm not worried about that per se. What does Boris do after he's done, Tom?
Oh, go and earn loads of money, I presume.
Yeah, event planner.
I mean, you know, why not?
Yeah.
I don't think he'll stand again. I'm not sure he's going to do a Theresa May and stay there.
No, God no. I mean, I can't see him being like a voice in the backbenches. Excellent. Well then, should we say thank you for listening to the Dirty Project?
Well, you watched it.
Well, I'm doing it. This is it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thank you.
And that's it. And that's the end. Yeah.